Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages. Welcome to the F4L headquarters. I am your host, the icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, and here tonight, we're having a throwback to a movement I started a long time ago on the world of Facebook, which I've since not been part of since. And of course, that would be Talking Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen. So let me tell you how Talking Tuesday began. Tonight, we may have callers, which I'm expecting some. Otherwise, we're going to have a really fun time tonight. But Talking Tuesday was something I started on back a long time ago when I was on Facebook a lot, or more than I am. Well, I'm not on Facebook at all anymore. But see, on Facebook and other places, I used to have all of these friends from all over the place, from all walks of life. In my theory about social media in general is if I didn't like you or if I didn't want to talk to you or, you know, whatever, I wouldn't add you or request you or whatever the case may be. So what I did was we always have those people in our lives that we talk to on a regular basis. And what I decided to do is on Tuesdays, I would set aside a certain amount of time every Tuesday that I would talk to everyone, open it up and called it Talking Tuesday, coined the phrase. And I would open up Talking Tuesday, went from six to, I think it was six to nine or something like that. And, or six to eight or six to nine or whatever it was. But I would do that every single Tuesday. It became kind of a movement and it became something that, you know, people got used to and people got accustomed to. So here we are, Talking Tuesday, and we're going to rehash that right here tonight. Now, done a little differently. Back in the day when I did Talking Tuesday on a regular, I would, you know, message, you know, random people who I normally wouldn't talk to on a regular basis. It wasn't because, you know, I was being rude or whatever, but it was just because, you know, you talk to the same people over and over again, as much as I like talking to the same people, you know, you kind of get used to it and whatever, and I kind of like to be kind of open and listen to everything and give everyone a chance to do so. So I would message, you know, pop a question, hello, happy Tuesday to, you know, whoever. And I would sometimes, what you don't know is I'd have about six or seven, maybe 12. At one point, I had about 14 or 15 conversations going. And it was all done via direct message on Facebook. So imagine having 15 different conversations going on with 15 different people. You know, sometimes it would be the usual Q&A for people who want to know more about pro wrestling or filmmaking or something I was working on. And sometimes it wouldn't be. So sometimes, you know, Talking Tuesday could pretty much happen with everything, really. So it was cool. So that's how it started. And, you know, it was something that a lot of people, like I said, got used to and something people enjoyed. So, you know, I did it. So we're going to do it here tonight. And what was going to be different is instead of me calling people or, you know, messaging people, I'm going to wait for them to call me. And if they don't, then I'll just sit here and I'll chat it up anyway. And my wife gave me a great idea. I got to give her credit for that. You know, something I've been also wanting to, you know, give some ideas about and throw some things out there. But, you know, couple things we're going to go over tonight. One, we're going to give you the full breakdown of our show from yesterday, the 4th. Those of you guys who watch our YouTube show and have been loyal to us, you guys know that we had our show yesterday on the 4th and put up all kinds of awesome matches. The regular card, plus we had a tournament to crown the best of 2020, both for the solos and the or the singles wrestlers and the tag team. A lot of big surprises. Some titles changed hands yesterday. Some friends went at each other, and people left the building for good and the galaxy far, far away. So we had a lot of good stuff there. So we're going to go over that, and we're going to go over, you know, various other things. It's not a very long time tonight, As I set aside some time, like I did for the Talking Tuesday, I'm going to honor that today. We got about an hour and a half or so, which is standard for a Talking Tuesday. So there you have it. Now, my wife also gave me the idea to talk about what we would have for a perfect convention. So as you guys know, I spoke with Michael Fishman, our first guest, a little while ago. And I told him that one of the things I enjoy to do is to do a lot of these, pop culture conventions. And I spoke the other day of how I got involved with going to these pop culture conventions. So it was a tribute to my mother, but also to thank people in the businesses in which I am involved in. People who've been there before, I thank them for their contributions. And people who are there now, I like to network and whatnot, because I'm always willing to meet new people. Because it shrinks the numbers, and there's nothing wrong with that. So there you go. Now, the other fun part is that when it comes to, having the convention, and my wife had, suggested I talk about what I would do for my perfect convention. Well, funny thing is I actually, if you have heard about Jazz and Friends Expo, that is something I'm planning on doing, and I have the green light to do those things. I just want to do it when it's going to be safe to do so. Unfortunately, it was scheduled for this past year, but as you know, nothing happened this past year because of everything else that went on. I don't talk a lot about, that because I don't want to give, too much away. But I thought, why not give some ideas and some talk about, the perfect convention until someone, jumps in here and calls in or whatever. What do you need to make or put on the great pop culture convention? And what do you have for a theme? Those people who are listening, maybe you guys have some ideas. You guys have any ideas on what would make a good convention? Here's what I think. I think you need a little bit of everything. Me personally, I've been to various different things in the themes, sometimes horror, sometimes wrestling themes, sometimes just a mix of everything. Like if you go to a New York Comic Con, you have a big, huge exhibit hall type of show, and you have, little bits of everything. Or you can have like one of these hotel shows, like a Monster Mania or a New England Fan Fest that are held at a hotel and whatnot. I do know that New England Fan Fest, it went into the convention hall one year. Someday when we get Joe Bruin, the promoter of New England Fan Fest, on here, we'll have to talk to him about that again. We had him on my old podcast, and we'll see if he comes down here and talk about that. And eventually we'll have Dave Hagan, the promoter of Monster Mania, who runs the Monster Mania convention down in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Today he's painting his house today, folks. And, with everything going on, I don't blame him. Gives you something to do, take your mind off things. I'm going to have them on there. They could talk more directly on, the actual going on of a convention. But, when I was thinking about how I would do Jazz and Friends Expo, one of the things I really want to do is bring in people, one, who I feel are fan-friendly, and also people who I feel would be, kind of the dream people, but also people who I know I can rely on because – unfortunately, working in wrestling or in the entertainment business, there's so many people involved, and sometimes they're good and sometimes they're bad. And I've had unfortunates when I've worked with people who I thought I could trust, and as it turns out, I couldn't. And that's okay. That happens. You just learn from that and you move on. That's kind of how that works. So, but in general, what ends up happening is, eventually I felt like I couldn't rely on a lot of people. And that's not necessarily the truth either. I think you need a good solid group. And who are the solid people you would have? First of all, I think you need solid guests who you can rely on, who you know are going to be fan friendly, who people will enjoy meeting. Whether it be wrestlers or TV or film, music, whatever. I think the other thing you need to do is be outside the box. If you have, there are a lot of these people who you see at these meet and greets you see everywhere. And not that they're bad people or they're mean people or anything like that. They're all fantastic human beings, I feel. A lot of these people I get along with really well. And whenever I've gone to these shows and I see them, whether I'm a guest or I'm a patron or whatever, I always give my thanks to them for no matter. I you know, we share pleasantries and whatever, because that's the respectful thing to do. And I think it's always important to be respectful. First of all, so what are the things you need for that? So first of all, you need a good, like I said, you need a good team behind you. So I would probably rely on a lot of my people I can trust to help me as vaccines. So that would probably be my family, my wife, my two kids. I would probably have some type of role. For example, I think I would probably put my wife in charge of like the food area, because she's got a lot of great experience with the food area and knowing a lot about the meals and things of that nature. Plus, she's, you know, her penmanship's better than mine too. I'll give her that. So there's that. My son has a knack for knowing things about video games and pop culture references and things like that. But he also has a tendency to, you know, be on track of what's current and what's innovative. So I'd probably bring him on board for like a role in some kind of, you know, who would we go get or whatever, who's pop cultured reference and stuff. But I'd probably also put him in charge of like him and my daughter probably would both work in like the merchandise stands or whatever and selling tickets. Probably all three of them. I'd probably have my wife in the kitchen area overseeing a lot of the food and snacks and so forth. I would probably have my both kids working, tag teaming the, or actually I might split them up actually now that I think about it, because, you know, shrink the numbers. If I put my daughter in charge of the tickets and my son in charge of, you know, the merch. My daughter is probably talented enough to come up with the designs for the merchandise. I have all the faith in the world on her on that. And probably the logos and stuff like that. I could see her doing that kind of thing. And then, you know, I would have a lot of my friends who, well, my loyal friends, whatever that may be. And I would have them, you know, in roles as like security type thing or whatever, or whatever the case may be. And we'll go from there. I think, you know, the smaller conventions are probably a smarter idea. I think if you have more like a hotel type show, or maybe if you were to get maybe a Knights of Columbus Hall kind of a thing, and you would have like a smaller, even smaller scale thing. I think when you're starting out, you need something small. I don't think you should jump right into things. And I also don't agree at all aside of going into these big, huge adventure halls, because those are going to be overwhelming for anyone. One, you got to find space to, you know, fit everyone. If you're going to get vendors in there, you got to, you know, sell all the tables. I think if you were to have like a smaller convention or a smaller meet and greet at like a Knights of Columbus Hall, and or some type of hall like that. There's all kinds of halls you can rent for various different reasons. You get a hall, or you go to a hotel, or you work with that. If you do that, and you can, you know, work on a deal with the hotel and maybe get rooms for the guests, or, you know, whatever the case may be. I have known that you can actually get deals if you work with the hotel on, you know, various other things. So I think that's the way I would go, is bringing in that kind of juncture, that kind of thing. Now, when I was planning on doing Jazz and Friends Expo, for example, I was planning on renting out a local football field. And the reason for one or two of the events, because this is kind of how Jazz and Friends Expo is supposed to go, and eventually it will. I'm not going to give you a lot of details, but I can tell you that people have agreed to do so, and it's going to happen once it's safe to do so. And people are locked in and ready to go once it's ready to go. But the way it goes is like this. We're going to break our show into three parts. Day one are meet and greets with the celebrities, depending on what level you get. Or we could even do 4 days, really. 2 days of meet and greets. And then it will always be on a weekend. So maybe Thursday, Friday, you have the meet and greets. Saturday and Sunday would be the actual show. So this is the idea. So three parts of Jazz and Friends Expo. We have a wrestling show, a comedy festival, and a music festival. These are things that are already going to happen. So day one, for example, wrestling show, you'd have the meet and greets with the people who are going to be involved in the wrestling show. Then you would have for Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday would be 2 days of the actual show. Now, this is only done very rarely in local independent shows where you'll have 2 days of wrestling. But that's going to be fun. Now, when you add in the comedy era, these are also done in three different areas, obviously, too. So, for example, the comedy show would happen in the summer, and then the music festival is scheduled for October, because that is Anti-Bullying Month awareness, whether you knew that or not. Now you do. So that's kind of the idea. I had originally planned on having, the wrestling show around my birthday, possibly May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. I thought that'd be a good way to do that. May is also, we're going to help out the Jimmy Fund kind of area and help out that. The summer, I would help out the Wounded Warriors Foundation as that money would go towards them and help them out. And of course, the Born This Way Foundation, of course, we get help with the music festival and, the anti-bullying movement and stuff like that. That's a great program and foundation. And we've been in good contact with a lot of those people. And they're all fantastic organizations. Anywho, so that's fun. But that's kind of the envision I would have. I would want to do something outside the box. I wouldn't have, a lot of people have the meet and greets, which are cool. People, it's nice to, give the fans and the people their opportunity to say, to share their pleasantries or whatever, and their thanks or whatever. But also, I feel like you need to add something different than every one of these other conventions. A lot of these conventions will have panels or Q&As, and those are fun. And I'm not saying we wouldn't do those, but I feel like you need to entertain, and it should be, surrounding that area, that genre. But also, if you were to throw in like a surprise guest, but include them somehow in the show, like for example, in wrestling, I have some actual celebrities who are going to be part of the wrestling show who you might not know are part of the wrestling show, but they're going to be there, and that'd be kind of cool. But aside from that, if you would ask me, like, what guests I would bring in, I think you need the vendors, too, first of all. I think you need the tables and the vendors, so people who want to be there for that kind of thing. I think you need to include that, but I also think you can't really limit it to one over another. I think you need to have a little bit of everything. I think you would include a lot of I would probably invite a lot of the local filmmakers or the film companies, local filmmakers and companies to promote their products to the general public. Maybe one of these unknown studios want to sell their, DVDs or Blu-rays, whatever the case may be, a network out there. I think I'd allow that and so forth. And I think that'd be a fun time. I think having that for vendors and having things that are a little bit for everything, having the comic book people there for the comic book people and the wrestling people there for the wrestling people. I have a couple. I know plenty of people who sell wrestling merchandise, plenty of people who sell comic book stuff. I would include all those people, and I don't think it's right to exclude them or anything else. I have some awesome people who like to make horror-type themed merchandise, and they do a great job with those things as well, and that's always fun to see a lot of those people, and they're always usually fun with the guests, too, and they come part of the show. And I also think I would probably make it so it's, for all ages. But I also think that it should be for people who understand, different, things. For example, I have a friend of mine, my friend Dave, who runs a Monster Mania convention. And I remember getting into it one of the other fans because, they're at a horror convention and it's known they're at a horror convention. And they were upset because there was people in scary costumes near where the cast of the It Kids were waiting. So they're screaming 12-year-old girls could meet the It cast. And I remember telling the mother, I said, listen, you can't get upset at people for being dressed in a horror costumes or it being dubbed scary at a horror convention. And if you don't know that it's a horror convention, Why do you think the IT kids are here? And also I asked them, why do you think the kids know who they are? So I, you know, quickly went to the defense for the show. It's not the show's fault that things get like that a lot of the time. A lot of it comes time for people who aren't prepared for conventions. And there are those people. I mean, I know people who, at that very same show, people were coming into their lunch break expecting to walk up and get an autograph and a picture with Pee Wee Herman. I mean, that's common sense stuff. You know, if you want to meet someone, you pay money to go to a convention, you set aside that time like everyone else who's, you know, has some common sense, and you prepare to do that convention. So, you know, in that sense, I think I would make it clear that this is kind of a mixed bag of a convention, so you don't know what's going to happen. But also, I would, you know, if there's going to be horror type people or people, I'd probably cluster those people more together. So that way there, if you want wrestling, there's the wrestling group here. There's the horror people here. Here's the TV media personality over there. And now, you know, everyone's where they should be. But if you start going to opposite places and mixing up, which you should sample a little bit of everything, then, you know, I don't, you know, I think you should explore it all. I don't think you should exclude any part of it. But at least if you are a parent, for example, and you want to, you know, make that decision to keep your kids away from scary type things or horror type things, then, well, you keep your horror kids, to keep the kids away from those horror type places. You keep the, you know, keep them in the kid friendly area. That's honestly how I feel about it anyway. And maybe that sounds a little cold, but I'm someone who's both been part of it and also, you know, been to it. And I've seen, you know, the people who aren't prepared to go to these things, in the chaos that the fans usually bring, not the people for the most part. But let's talk about guests. A lot of the time these conventions have guests, and, you know, a lot of times you hear these stories about how, you know, these people who come to these shows don't seem to want to be there, or, you know, are rude to fans. And I think, first of all, it's important to know, like, who those people are. And I also believe, and this is my belief, and I've said this time and time again, you have to have your own experience with someone. You can't take what someone else said about someone without, you know, without having some knowledge. Now, for example, me, using myself for an example, I've had both ends. I've I have been someone who has had a negative experience with a celebrity that other people have gotten along very well with, and vice versa. I've gotten along with people and no one else seemed to enjoy, but I got along with them wonderfully. So it kind of happens that way. I'm not going to go into, you know, the negatives because, you know, that's how it is. But I think there are definitely those people, you know, you can rely on. I think those are the people who you want to do business with, the people who know what they're doing, the ones who you don't have to worry about, the ones who are so used to the, you know, doing these shows that it's second nature to them. If you're going to have, top five, I'd probably go Kane Hodder, Robert Englund, as far as horror goes. If I was going to pick each genre, I'd say, you know, if you're going horror, I'd go Robert Englund, Kane Hodder, Chandler Riggs, Danielle Harris, Tyler Main, Alex Vincent, probably. How many was that? I don't even know. But I would probably go with that first. I mean, I've met a lot of great people in horror, but those individuals right there are fantastic people who I've had a lot of great interactions with over the years. Other people, you know, Tyler Labane, you might remember him from Sons of Tucson or Dale and Tucker's I don't remember the name of that, to be honest, Zombie, whatever it was. But Tyler Labane, I remember him from Sons of Tucson. I love that kid. That guy is so funny, but also he's wicked cool. I really enjoy talking to him. But I also think you need to have some of those, you know, 80s references. People I've never seen at a convention who I think would be fun, and I don't know how accurate it would be to have them there. I think I would try to go get like people like M. Night Shyamalan, for film, And I would probably try to do like a little mini, you know, if I could get M. Night Shyamalan and maybe a few of the guys from It, or not It, I'm sorry. If M. Night Shyamalan, and then maybe get like, you know, good luck getting Haley Joel Osment, but Haley Joel Osment, and, you know, get a kind of a collection of people who have been featured in M. Night Shyamalan movies. I think that'd be kind of cool. I respect M. Night Shyamalan a great deal, and I think people have him pegged incorrectly. That's my own feeling. But I also think I'd go outside the box, too. I mean, there's certain people I think I would definitely bring in. Jackson Robert Scott, who's been in It as Georgie, also been in The Prodigy, and also is currently on the show Lock and Key on Netflix. Jackson R. Scott seems to have a really good rapport with fans, and I've never heard any bad reviews on him. I've not met him in person, unfortunately. I've not talked to him. But as you know, on my show, I featured him because I believe that he is a future player. I think he's also in the wrong genre. I think he needs to be in the front of a comedy, not in the top of the horror. But anyway, whatever the case may be, he's a great talent. I think he'd be fun. I also think Gaitlin Matarazzo, I believe his name is, he plays Dustin on Stranger Things. I've seen his interactions with people. Again, I've not met him in person as of yet. He's one of those individuals. And actually, a lot of these people seem to be people who we just miss each other either by a year or, you know, he's doing a show here, I'm doing a show over there. And usually what happens with these things. But Gaitlin Matarazzo from Stranger Things, I hope I'm not butchering his name, and I probably am. But Gaitlin Matarazzo from Stranger Things, Dustin, I think I would have him on there just because I've seen how he interacts with fans. Same thing goes for Jack Dylan Glazer from It and from Shazam and that show on HBO right now. It's escaping me, but that's pretty cool. But, you know, that seems like I'm talking a lot of horror people. But, I mean, I watch a variety of things. I think some other people outside the box would be great. But also, I think I would open this up to people who people have a negative influence, have a negative opinion on, to see if maybe we could change that. Maybe they're not as bad as they are in real life. Maybe that would be a disaster. But I would be willing to give a person a chance. Like, I would bring in Shia LaBeouf into a convention because I feel, number one, he's a tremendous actor. Number two, he reaches so many genres and so many eras, and he has a very impressive repertoire of, I mean, his catalog of movies he's been in. As I said the other day, my son, two of his favorite movies are Holes and the Transformer films, and he knows who Shia LaBeouf is. I know him from those movies, as well as I know him from, you know, other things. And I'm in the filmmaking business, so, I mean, I see a lot of these independent-type movies, and he just the Peanut Butter Falcon, fantastic. The Honey Boy movie, fantastic. And a list of others that he did a great job in. You know, a lot of people classify him as, you know, Lewis Stevens on Eva Stevens. I'd never even watched that show, but I knew who he was from these other projects. And I thought, yeah, this kid's got something. People don't want to work with him supposedly in Hollywood. But you know what? I said it before. I'll say it again. I would work with Shia LaBeouf. No problem. I would probably also try to get someone like, you know, outside the box, which would be crazy, right? But I also think that without trying, there's no hurt in trying it, right? But I would try to probably go get, you know, Michael Fishman from Roseanne. I don't actually think that would be too hard now that I think about it. But or a couple of people from The Conners, you know, like I said, Roseanne, you know, get Michael Fishman, maybe bring in the young lady who plays his daughter, maybe the one who plays his wife. I thought that'd be kind of cool. Or maybe bring in, you know, Ames McNamara, who's also on our card. Maybe I should make a show based on my wrestling show. What about that? That'd be interesting, huh? What a wild show that would be if I was to have a pop culture convention based on Dream Masters. So you'd have, like, let's see, who would you have? You'd have, you know, me and my son there, of course, and the Squared Circle Cafe, my wife and her friends. Or a co-host, I should say, they'd be in there. You'd probably have, you know, like I said, Jackson R. Scott. You'd have the guys from OK Thank You, Mike Tristan and Robin. Those are YouTubers. Also, you'd have YouTube icon Minty, Comedic Arts from over in Australia. Of course, that'd be a long way for him to come just to be in a pop culture convention. you know what? Maybe that's what I should look into. Maybe I should create a convention based on Dream Masters or bring in the Dream Masters characters or the people based upon in real life. What do you guys think about that? Would that be entertaining? Of course, I'd have to bring in, you know, Robert Englund and Kane Hodder because they are the Horror Connection, the long-reigning tag team. What if I was bringing in Ed Boon, the creator of Mortal Kombat, seeing how, you know, the famed Fire and Ice are based upon, we've been calling Fire and Ice, which is Scorpion and Sub-Zero, that since forever. And he's even, you know, messaged and said how great he thinks that is. So good for us. But, you know, just brainstorming at this point. And it's fun to brainstorm like that. But that'd be fun, huh? You know, and countless other people. I mean, I have 100 people on my roster. But if I was to have this, you know, pop culture convention based on Dream Masters, now that I think about it, that would be very much open to everything anyway, because you have musicians, you have comic book type people. So you have to either bring in the character who plays them or people who created them. Like, I mean, you don't even necessarily have to have, you know, like if I want to feature the Punisher, I could bring in either the artists who, you know, the people who have worked on the Punisher comics for years. Because if you didn't know, now you do. The Punisher is my favorite comic book character of all time. Seconded by, you know, probably Deadpool and Lobo and Ghost Rider. In case you didn't notice, in case you didn't catch those names, those are names that, granted, Deadpool is kind of getting popularity now. But if you were to ask, you know, 5, 6, 10, or even 10 years ago, people about Deadpool, they wouldn't even be able to tell you anything. But now, because it's been such a huge following, now everyone wants to be part and loves Deadpool. The Punisher had a couple movies. Granted, my personal opinion, the Thomas Jane version of the Punisher was my favorite comic book movie to date, if you want to know my truth. You know, but that would be a lot of fun. But I mean, look at everyone else we'd have to have on our show. We'd have to have, my son's favorite voice actor, Nolan North, because he does the voice for my son's group, the Uncharted series. He does the voice for Nathan Drake. And of course, Nathan Drake is part of my son's kind of clique. That'd be interesting. You know what? I might have to look into this. I might have to make a convention about Dream Masters. Because, I mean, Nolan North does a lot of pop culture conventions. A lot of these people who have on a roster probably never done a convention. Some of them probably have, but, I mean, Chandler Riggs, of course, has been on our show before. Daryl Dixon, a.k.a. Norman Reedus, has been on our show before. Jax Teller, a.k.a. Charlie Hunnam, he's been on our show. I mean, my relative from another, Billy Gilman, he could be there. Colin Dillon Sprouse, the Wonder Twins. Supposedly, they're not very popular right now either, apparently, but, you know, I've known them for a little while, so I don't have a problem with them. Eric Persullivan, who's been missing from Hollywood. Frankie Muniz, sadly enough, I've known Frankie, a lot of those guys, for a number of years, but unfortunately, I don't know if you guys knew this. Frankie Muniz was on the show Malcolm in the Middle, if you guys don't know. I used to love that show because I'm like, wow, they finally made a show about my family. Most accurate one possible, almost. But we met at a convention or a conference, I should say, for lesser-known entertainers a number of years ago. This is the early days before the Malcolm in the Middle thing, and before a lot of us really took off. I was new to pro wrestling. My cousin was new to music and so forth. And actually what started at me, you know, calling out another person who was there being kind of arrogant and making kind of not being mean and not trying to be mean, but I was kind of making jokes at their expense because they acted high and mighty. And if you guys haven't noticed, I'm not afraid to bring people down to, you know, Normalville. But, it's fun, but it's a lot of good times. But but they basically, because, you know, all of that, you know, the group of us, they called us the clique because, you know, we kind of all buddied around together and whatnot. So my cousin, myself, me, and all these other people. We were kind of butting around together, so they called us the Click. So that's the story behind the Click. But anyway, you know, but if I was to have this convention and bring people like them and, you know, other people we featured on our show, I think that'd be kind of original. I don't think anyone's done a show based on something they've done on YouTube. But, I mean, being a YouTube icon, I mean, you could do that. I mean, you know, it's a thought in the air right now. You know, I asked a question to a fellow filmmaker, you know, Michael Fishman the other day, you know, about, and I think I mentioned this on the show, about making The Breakfast Club modern day. This is another project that I'm thinking about putting together. And, you know, maybe trying to put a pitch together to make that happen. A modern day Breakfast Club, but it would have to be updated. And you'd have to have more cliches because since The Breakfast Club has come out since the 80s, we now have even more, you know, tropes and everything else. So there's no cliches. Before you had the jocks, the princess, the outcast, the brain and the jock. Now, and the criminal. Now you have, you know, the goth, the goth, the druggie, the, you know, the artsy person, the person who's into anime, the person who's kind of in between everywhere, the floater, they call it. And then, you know, what I found funny, when I was preparing to do, you know, when you do research on things before you make it happen, you do research. And apparently the role that Ally Sheedy played in The Breakfast Club, who, you know, you guys remember in The Breakfast Club, she played kind of the outcast who was kind of like invisible, if you would. She acts so bizarre or whatever, or she's just not seen. They call those people normal, believe it or not. They call those normals. I kid you not. The term for someone who is invisible in school, who basically just doesn't fit anywhere. They're so like, you know, they're so like under the radar, they're considered normal. So I guess it pays to have some originality to actually be a thing, I guess. Otherwise, you're just normal and you're boring and invisible. Go figure. By being invisible, you're not seen. Anyway, so if you're normal, you can't be seen. But if you do something outlandish, then obviously, you know, thus far. But, I mean, that's what we'd have to do if you were to make The Breakfast Club. And I also think the other thing I would do differently is I would definitely bring in, with all the talented young men and women today who are teenagers, I think the thing that took people out of the original Breakfast Club, I mean, not that it lost too much steam, it is probably one of the most popular and most iconic movies of the 80s, but I would probably cast some teenage actors. Actually, all the teenage roles should be teenagers currently in school. Unfortunately, you'd have to exclude other talents, like I said the other night. I did talk about that the other night, I believe, on my show about, you know, who I would cast in those roles and whatnot. I think that'd be fantastic. But now that I'm sitting here talking to you guys about, you know, this Dream Matches kind of convention, I'm kind of wondering, could I pull that off by pulling in various people who are part of the Dream Matches universe? Of course, we have to wait till, you know, things are given the green light that life can turn back to normal. But imagine if I was to bring some of these Dream Masters to life and people could meet the stars of Dream Masters. Now, granted, a lot of our young stars, or a lot of our, you know, current stars, I mean, I think it would be great exposure for them. But, I mean, they have a lot of things going on in their real lives. We have people from all over the world who are part of our roster right now. We have people from Russia, all over the United States, Canada, South America, Australia. Can't, you know, so we go all over the place. But, you know, I think it would be kind of different if we would have someone, you know, various people to represent different people. You know, that'd be kind of cool. I don't think you could probably get Tom Hardy, who played Bane, to be in the show, but I could very much probably go get, you know, Scott Snyder, or one of the people who worked on Batman, maybe one of the artists who wrote the Breaking of the Bat, where Bane became, you know, notorious in the graphic novel. Because quite frankly, I actually prefer the comic book versions of these villains more so than the, you know, movie versions. I actually despise the Doomsday version in the film, if any of them, apparently, because they change and they destroy the aura of what I believe Doomsday to be. Now, I know I'm saying how awesome a villain is, but if you guys read that series and you watched it and you read it through its story, the whole idea Doomsday was his mystery that surrounded him. He was this unstoppable monster, and it wasn't in the comic book series. There was nothing mentioned about him having. There was no part of him having kryptonite in his body or in his blood or blah blah blah. It was strictly that he was big, he was powerful. No one's ever seen anything like him before. And they definitely didn't do him justice in the movie version, any of them. In the graphic novel, he wiped out the majority of the Justice League. I mean, he wiped out a good number of them. They were all pretty big numbers over there. A lot of the top-notch Justice League members, like Wonder Woman, Batman, Green Lantern themselves, and Martian Manhunter, they were late to the party when it was going on, but they have so many other Justice League members who Doomsday went through like they were butter. Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, Guy Gardner, who else was he wipe out? There was so many of them. Bloodwayne, I think, was in there. And Supergirl. I mean, he wiped out everyone before he even got to Superman. Then Superman got there, and everyone's expecting, well, Superman is going to give it to him because no one's going to beat Superman. Well, Doomsday didn't just beat Superman. He beat him to death. I know that sounds graphic on my show, but let's call it a spade a spade. Doomsday didn't use any tactics. He didn't use kryptonite. He didn't have a special weapon. He just was just unstoppable. No matter how hard Superman hit him, he kept on coming. And, you know, the blows of both of them were what took them out. Granted, you know, that led into the return of Superman and, you know, all of those series that went on, just Funeral for a Friend and all that. I think I've gone on record and said how, you know, Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Captain America, and I know this is going to not be happy, but people aren't going to be happy with me, but I always find those guys to be really, really overrated and really blown up bigger than they really are. And I think there's much more talented people in their universes than they should be paying more attention to. And no one even knows who they exist unless they make a movie about them, like a Deadpool. I think Punisher is one of those people, which, you know, he has a good following, but no one cares. If you would ask people about the Punisher versus, you know, Spider-Man, someone's obviously going to say Spider-Man's better. In DC, if you were to say, who do you like better, Hawkman or, you know, the Green Lantern, they're going to say, well, the Green Lantern, I know who he is. But, I mean, this, what about Swamp Thing? What about Lobo? Lobo is a great person. We haven't even seen a movie version of him yet. And when we do, I'll be on that. I'll watch the Lobo movie all day. You know, Ghost Rider, they tried in a movie form, but if you read the comic books, it was great. And I got to tell you this too, early days of Spawn, the comic book series Spawn, some of the best artwork at that time when they first started out was really amazing. At that time, when Spawn first started coming out, Image was doing this. The ink work and the coloring and the patterns that Spawn was producing was better than any other comic book genre anywhere. That's over anyone on Marvel and DC, because I read them all. And Image definitely did a better job with presentation with Spawn over any other comic book. Now, it seems that they've all kind of adapted whatever that art, you know, thing they used for that, and they've copied that, which happens, right? But what an amazing series it was. So I can't believe we're on 45 minutes already. This is fun talking Tuesday. Chris, no one's called in yet, but that's okay. It happens. And like I said, I'm prepared. If people call in, they do. If they don't, it's okay. I'm here. And again, this is kind of I realized today that I really haven't put this out here very much, so. But I'm going to, you know, try to start doing that a little bit more often. Maybe I'll have to keep Talking Tuesday going until, you know, people are used to it, like I did the original Talking Tuesday. But maybe I need to make it longer. We'll examine that. But I hope you guys are enjoying this. It's a lot of fun me doing these podcasts and stuff like that. I'm excited about the new home we here at the FOL headquarters. It's only fitting to call it that. So. The place where people can come and hang out and be comfortable, and they can be welcomed by the icon leader himself, me. you know, and, you know, it's fun times. And I'm hoping to bring in more people, and I'm hoping to bring awareness to various different things and say what's on my mind, which is probably on the majority of everybody else's minds, too. So, is that too? But, yeah. So, going into, you know, conventions again, I'm thinking, you know, again, I would definitely probably have to have like 6 or 4 of each kind of genre at least. I mean, who else would I have? What other genres do you need? If you're going to have wrestling, okay, for example, I'm from wrestling world, right? What wrestling of my brotherhood would I bring in there? Well, Hillbilly Jim, hands down. Hillbilly Jim, the country boy from Louisville, Kentucky, fantastic human being. Hillbilly Jim is a WWE Hall of Famer. He's made the rounds among all the territories. Wicked nice guy, wicked professional, wicked friendly. And as someone in the wrestling business, he is, you know, also someone who's willing to sit there and talk to you for a few minutes and give you some pointers. Fantastic guy. I really enjoyed Hillbilly Jim and talking with Hillbilly Jim. Other people, of course, Dan the Man Pewter, good friend of mine, who at some point he'll be on the show too. But Dan the Man Pewter, who has his own podcast, which you should go check out too. He's a fellow Bully Buster, and he's a, you know, tag team partner in that end of things. But Dan Pewter, who was, you know, a tough enough winner in WWE and MMA fighter fame, and now he's, you know, changing the world and making, you know, exposing the bullies of the world and empowering kids. So, you know, bullies are less and less, hopefully. And I'm all on board getting rid of the bullying thing, because no one should have that. And there's so many other talented people like Dan Pewter. I would bring Hillbilly Jim, Tito Santana, Intercontinental Champion, Tag Team Champion, World Champion places. You guys probably know him from WWE. He was El Manador. He was Tag Team Champion in the Strike Force for Rick Martel. You could probably add Rick Martel to that list too. I've not, unfortunately, met Rick Martel. We've missed each other various places, but I have had the opportunity to have Tito Santana on the fitness center before. He was a fantastic guy, even though my character was a jerk, but he worked wonderfully. You know, those guys would probably be there. The Godwins are a riot. Phineas and Henry Godwin, Dennis Knight, and Dennis Knight is Phineas Godwin, and I can't remember Henry Godwin's name, but they're fantastic guys. Wicked, you know, down-to-earth individuals, fun guys to hang out with. I mean, we went to a convention. I was my friend Joe Bruin's convention down in Warwick, Rhode Island one year, and that was just a blast. We were all hanging out in the hotel. The Godwins were walking around barefoot throughout the hotel. WWE was in town, so the current stars came down to meet the old guys, and just watching the interactions was hysterical. And, you know, and I knew a lot of these people, and a lot of them were fun, cool people, you know. And it was a good time. Oh, I apparently have a call. Let's find out who it is. Apparently. Let's find out how this works. How do I answer this? Let's see. How do I get this guest? The microphone. Hello? Oh.
There we go.
Greetings and salutations.
Hello? Oklahoma.
Oh, hello. It is good old Jeremy. Is this correct?
It is.
Hello?
Oklahoma City. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Excellent. Is this our good friend Jeremy?
It should be. I don't know if
excellent.
You can hear me.
Oh, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
Excellent. I can hear you too. My headphones are, you know, old-fashioned headphones. You know me. Plus, you know, when you get a couple of chair shots to the head, that kind of impacts your hearing sometimes. How you doing, Jeremy, out there in Oklahoma?
It's a little chilly out here. Sun just set. Yeah, sun just set, and it's kind of pretty out here. But, I'm just kind of getting a little stroll in before Tuesday evening Bible study.
Oh, fun. Good for you. Something to do, huh? Is that something you've been doing for
something.
A while, or is this something new?
This is something I've been doing since September of 18, at least when I was home.
Oh, okay. Hey, whatever works, man.
Yeah.
Is that helping you?
It does some, yeah.
Oh, good.
It does
That's
do
good
me
to
some
hear.
Good, so.
Nice. Awesome. Well, glad you could join us.
Yeah.
Excellent.
At least for a few minutes.
Right?
So
well,
what did you think? What did you think of Goldberg last night?
What did I think of? So I guess that answers my question. You still watch wrestling, huh?
I keep up with it. I kind of faded out a little bit.
Yeah, you and me both, I think, were on that. You know, I love talking to people who are also, you know, been around the, well, I mean, I've, as you know, I've been in the business, but I know, you know, you've been around and you do the studies. I know you guys are really pretty good with that kind of stuff. And I always like hearing other people's opinions on wrestling. And, you know, I've been dying to talk to someone wrestling for quite some time who's, you know, someone who's not like one of these people who think Dave Meltzer is like God or something like that. And I'm told that you are one of those people who, like myself, think he's a cancer to the business. But
well,
is that fair to say, or are you a Dave Meltzer reader?
I'm not a reader of his. Although I will say this, Bruce Mitchell's a fucking idiot from the PW
yeah.
Torch.
Yeah.
Or at least he was from the Torch.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I know the story, too. And I guess,
yeah.
And actually, a lot of us, we're talking a lot about that. And I think what I'm surprised about is not only that, well, not surprised about it, people like him just don't belong anywhere near. And people really should take what people like him say with a grain of salt anyway. My thing about it is I feel like a lot of those guys, and this is my personal feeling, who have never actually been involved in pro wrestling, love to stir up and talk about pro wrestling as if they know something about how to put a match together, how to perform,
they like to stir
and they don't.
Shit.
What's that? Yeah, they love doing that, and especially at an untimely time like that. I can't wait until the day when, you know, everyone finds out. You know, Dave Meltzer's just in the same boat as you know as Mitchell there, but give it time, and everyone will be on that bandwagon too.
Well,
but as far
well,
as Goldberg showing up, you know, they advertised they were going to have this Legends Night, right? So,
yep.
Of course, you know, you have all these other things you got to work in, too. So I'm like, how are they going to – and then when they announced the original a bunch of people was supposed to be on. Where are they – I'm thinking, where are they going to fit all of these people? How are they going to – it's going to be like a little itty-bitty segment, or it's going to be even on the – you know, the Thunderdome screen or something, because technically they're there, right?
Right.
Because how many times did they, you know, announce that so-and-so is going to be there? Like The Rock, for example, is going to be, you know, live in the building. It was like via satellite or whatever, you know what I mean? But as far as that goes, Goldberg coming out at the end, they advertised these legends were going to be there. Of course, Goldberg was one of the people they advertised, and no one's
yep.
seen him all day, and I was wondering, here comes the book. I remember thinking to myself, okay, so Goldberg hasn't shown up yet, and I know that he just said not long ago that he wants to get in there, in
yep.
the ring again, somehow. And I said, well, I guess I know what's going to happen here. And, of course, here he came. What did you think of that, more importantly? What did you think of Goldberg coming down and challenging Drew McIntyre?
As long as they don't give Goldberg the title, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
It's not the main event of the Royal Rumble. The Rumble sells the Rumble. So
yeah,
I'm okay with
it,
I'm okay with it as long as McIntyre comes out of it with the championship.
Mm-hmm.
If Goldberg comes out of it without or with the WWE championship, then you've just killed Drew McIntyre. I'm sorry.
I think they almost did that already. Who did they lose the title to? Was it Randy Orton?
Orton.
Yeah. I think they already kind of tried to do that, and it just didn't work out. But yeah, I think people like Goldberg, unfortunately, I don't know. See, here's the issue. My thing is this. And I know some of my guys, my fellow guys who've been in the business a long time, and actually you'll see some of them, even if people don't like them or not, they still do it. There comes a time when the older talent who's been around a long time, it's time to pass the torch. You all heard about that before. And there are certain guys that they have on the roster who are older, who have been around longer, who I believe are doing exactly that. Like my good former friend, well, not my former friend, he's still my friend, and my former tag team partner and longtime friend, AJ Styles, for example. He is an individual who knows the importance, he knows his role, and he knows that his job is to get the younger talents over. And even if people don't like him and people see he's this heel and all these things, me, who knows, you know, him pretty well and also knows the business, it's nice to see someone who I can see who's building the younger guys. He's not afraid of losing to that person to get them up. And like last night, my Gladys and I were talking, and she was watching him and Elias. I said, well, all honesty, you can't get Flair in the ring anymore. It used to be back in the day, if you put someone in the ring with, say, a Ric Flair or in WWE, a Shawn Michaels or a Bret Hart, they would make that person look like gold. You know what I mean? That was what their role was.
Every time,
And
I mean,
AJ Styles.
Ric Flair could have a match with a fucking broomstick.
Absolutely. And it would be entertaining. It would be believable. He sells it, and he knows the importance of that. Now, my issue with guys like Goldberg is, I think, well, they already showed that, you know, they have no idea. But, like, they had the Fiend going. That was a pretty big thing. And then they made that decision to take it off of him, to give it to Goldberg, just for him to drop it to Mac, to Reigns, I think it was, right?
It was supposed to be Reigns. It ended up being Strowman.
Yeah, that's right. Strowman, of course. Yeah. And all of it, I'm like, why? Well, I mean, you know, Goldberg is an individual with his name. And he did it for, you know, Braun Strowman. But, you know, I feel like Goldberg's one of those individuals that needs to be one of those people that you need to take the L on that. He's an individual whose name was built on the winning streak, right? That was what made Goldberg so big. That's right. He was so big because of that unstoppable machine that he was. But what people are seeing is he doesn't like to lose anyway, from what we're understanding. And I've talked to people
Well, let me just say this. You know, I love how McIntyre incorporated that into his response last night.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's something also that needs to be put in there. You know, and that's one of the things that, you know, I got to say that they got to do some more working with that too, but he's getting better. Promos are a really important thing anyway, and McIntyre has had that gift of the gab, so to speak, and I've always known that Drew is pretty good on certain things. And no, unfortunately, you have to, you know, unfortunately got to be one of those people that says, I told you so, and he's one of those people. I think, honestly, I think The Fiend or Bray Wyatt is one of those people. I don't know his – I don't, you probably, you know, I'm sure you knew, you know, the brains behind The Fiend, but, you know, when it came to helping with that, I take a lot of pride in that, and I'm proud of that, and I'm proud that he was able to take that and run with it, and he's still trying it. It's just, you know, what happens when the cat's away.
When the cat's away, the mice will play, right?
That's right, and unfortunately, you know, you can lead the horse to water. Unfortunately, you can't make the horse drink. And that was kind of what happened there. You know, you start making the line and then they go all over the place. But I think there's a lot of talent on there that they haven't even utilized yet. And unfortunately, a lot of it comes down to delivery. And I don't know how many guys over there are believable to do promos. I think promos are so important because, you know, I don't know. That's just me. I'm a promo guy, as you know.
Got to sell people. You got to talk them into the building, or in the current era, you got to talk them into buying.
Right.
You got to get people to buy in.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Jeremy. When you first started watching wrestling, what year was it? I'm not 100% certain. When did you start watching wrestling?
97.
So almost the height of wrestling pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was within 6 months of the beginning of the NWO.
Sure, sure. Now, I got to tell you, now that is around the era. Now, that was the time period, the late 90s, when everyone, I don't care who they are, everyone watched pro wrestling. And also, one of my other things about people who like to make fun of wrestling or people who like wrestling is they're usually just throwing the stones because everyone at some point in their life has watched pro wrestling, whether they want to admit to it or not. And during that era, 90s and whatever, that was the height of wrestling. You couldn't go anywhere without some wrestling reference going somewhere. And they
right.
still, and other sports incorporate pro wrestling in their gimmicks and everything else. So, you know, all these
yeah.
people who like to promote, like, you know, the real, quote, real sports or whatever, they will never under,
yep.
you know, that's still alive, you know, or at least for now.
Oh, yeah. For the time being, yeah.
Now, I'll tell you, one of the great things back in the 90s, actually, this is one of the things I'm struggling with. See, ever since, you know, I am no longer writing for them anymore. And, you know, basically, but then again, I wrote old school. So basically everything they're working on right now, I wrote like just before I left. So they're running on half-ass ideas I did like 6 months before I left. Because I write the old school way, like writing months and years almost advanced. That's how I write. That's long-term booking. That's the way honestly
right.
should go, rather than this, you know, the day of event show, because that's when everything runs into chaos. But I'm no longer, you know, involved over there, which they were doing that tag team thing with the Viking Raiders and the what is it, the Street Profits, right? That was when I said to her,
yeah.
I said, I'm not watching anymore. I can't do this. and I've been very vocal about my disappointment, and not only that, but for me, myself, I've been in the business for a long time, but also before I was in the business, I grew up like yourself, a fan of wrestling. And just to see me personally, I am a really tough critic on a lot of things, but when
yep.
I see things going on in pro wrestling that make a mockery out of it, or I feel insults either me, the person, or the business, I just can't get behind it. And
yep.
like that match, I'm like, what is this? And it wasn't just that. It was that match. There was this hokey, the ninja showing up, the octopus at the end, the cinema, the background music walking down a hall. I'm like, what the hell is this? This is a tag team
okay.
title match, and they're having background
yep.
music like it's some type of TV show? And then,
yep.
you know, it would just get worse from there. I think they had a dream scenario on live pro wrestling. Am I correct? I mean, I don't watch it like that. I don't know if you watch that. They did a dream scenario with Otis,
that.
I think. I'm like, what is that? And I'm like,
well,
okay, I'm done. You know, I can't do this anymore. I can't watch.
With WWE,
and then on
same,
mm-hmm.
with WWE, where I got to my break point was early in June. Because, and it had some... There were, some of it had to do with the product in the ring, but
mm-hmm.
some of it had to do with how WWE was handling the COVID and the
mm-hmm.
whole speaking out. And
yeah.
I just felt dirty watching it to a point where I was just like, I can't anymore.
Yeah.
At
yeah.
least for a little bit.
Sure. I can understand that.
So,
I mean, I took an extensive break from that. And then the problem with me, for me, is, you know, back when I, certainly in wrestling, it's had its highs and lows in pro wrestling. Like back when TNA was really, in my opinion, when TNA was really good, early days of TNA, back when AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, CM Punk, you know, Bobby Roode, the Outlaws, all that stuff. Back in those days of TNA, that was good to me. And back then,
right.
this is after, of course, WCW is gone, ECW is gone. You know, you have WWE for the longest time than TNA was here. In all honesty, I actually felt more, you know, respected by TNA's product. Plus, I knew a lot of the guys on the roster. You know, a lot of them I've known throughout the years. The locker rooms were a lot of the guys. And actually, they're the reason I had my workout down there.
Yep.
Of course, you know, I also you know, probably a reason why they left shortly after I didn't take the contract they wanted to give me either, because I'm not – I also know the writing was on the wall back then when they told me that who they were bringing in for creative. I'm like, I'm all set. But regardless of that, at least my time – when I first gave WWE a timeout was during that Hornswoggle spot where he ran through the wall. Are you familiar with this set? It was a long time ago. Hornswoggle put the hole on the wall like the Roadrunner used to do. It supposedly ran through it. Then the guy went to try to do it after. Like, what? I'm done. I turned the channel, went to TNA. What's up?
That was Jonathan Coachman that tried to chase him, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably correct. It was some nobody. But anyway, that was insulting to me that they pulled this Roadrunner stuff on television for wrestling. I'm like, okay, I'm done. You know what? If that's how they're going to treat me as someone who's either been in the business and, you know, being someone who has also enjoyed it, I'm done. I'm not watching this. So I went to TNA, and I watched nothing but TNA for a long time, the early days, which is why I was really a believer in that product back then. I had no problem with the old early days of TNA. Unfortunately, now, years later, of course, TNA's product would fall because, exactly like I predicted, when they brought in the creative minds they told me they were bringing in, prior to me to them announcing it to everyone else, of course, you know, who won the pony on that one? Glad I never got involved there. But, you know, that's a sinking ship. I don't even know what channel that's on anymore. But that's a lost
Access
cause.
TV.
Yeah, there you go. But that's a lost cause. I mean, let's face it. I think I heard they did like a whodunit murder mystery last I heard about TNA.
Yeah.
And then WWE, I'm not happy with their product. And then AEW. Granted, you know, the thing they did there for Brody was awesome. Other than that, see, a lot of people don't know, a lot of the guys on TNA, on the AEW roster, aren't even actually trained in a pro wrestling school. They're not trained by it. A lot of them learned in the backyard. And in pro wrestling, you know, you're always trained not to go into people like that. You're trained not to, you know, endorse backyard wrestling because it's not safe, because usually people do things they shouldn't be doing. And AEW hired a lot of guys who are from that, who are trained in their backyard, not trained by an actual wrestling school. And what the sad part is, a lot of those guys are actually the high executives, which is scary to me. But, you know, a lot of guys like the Young Bucks, for example, or the Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega is probably one of the biggest people that everyone says how great he is, but he's not actually trained in pro wrestling. He tried to do a class. He couldn't do it. He said he didn't need it. He originally went to try to get trained by, I think it was Lance Storm. He said he didn't need it. He said it was all fake. He didn't need it. It was all work. And he walked out, never went to a wrestling school again. Then he went on to go to New Japan and all these other places. I don't really watch New Japan. I'm not really, you know, whatever. And also, you know, myself, I come from an era where I don't mind a sleeper hold or a chin lock or something like that to draw out a match. And to me personally, I used to go back to watch those old school pay-per-views, the old WrestleManias, the old Survivor Series, those SummerSlams. Or in WCW, for example, you had Clash of Champions. These were places they would have these long matches, and they would have like a chin lock or a headlock or something, and it would make the match, yeah, it would make it longer, but it was something that made sense. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and my problem with, you know, a lot of people in the AEW roster came down on Jim Ross for saying that, you know, he criticized them by doing all this flippy stuff and not enough substance, or the flippy stuff's not getting, you know, there's too much of that and it doesn't really pay off and all these other things. And the stars of AEW got upset about that, apparently. And let me ask you this. What do you think about what he said about, you know, the products of the AEW? Do you watch AEW?
I do, and it's a fair – I think he made a fair point in that, you know, it's not believable that these guys would just stand there and wait to be caught.
Right.
But
right, exactly.
Beyond that, I don't know, dude.
So let me ask you this. See, I don't watch AEW like that because anytime I've tried to watch, I'm like, I see like Jim Ross does, or I see other things, or I hear other things, or just some things. I'm like, no. And also, like I said, if I see someone who I know isn't trained in a ring, I can't watch that because I know what happens. Unfortunately, I've seen what right. happens when people aren't properly trained in a ring, and it's not always pretty. I've seen yep. really, really bad things happen to people, including me. But,
sure.
you know, if I had known the person I was wrestling, for example, was under the influence or was not safe to work with, granted, he was trained, but if I had known that that person was known not to be safe to be in a ring, then I wouldn't have gone in the ring with them because that's putting my life and my body at risk. And when you go into a ring with people who aren't trained like that, then I can't watch someone who I have respect for get hurt. You know what I mean? That's just me.
Yep.
But I also have an issue with people like those new school people, you know, criticizing or coming down on Jim Ross for giving them feedback about, you know, how, you know, maybe less of that and more actual things, you know? And
right.
my thing about it is Jim Ross has been around the block
right.
quite
go
a
ahead.
Few times.
Go ahead.
And he's seen everything. He's called all of the stuff for almost every match. You know, he knows a few things. You know what I mean? I think it's important to listen to people who've been around longer. Even me, who's been in the business, I just celebrated 23 or 24 years as I started. I was crack, you know. back in November was like 23 years, I think. But in general, there are people who've been in the business longer than me, and I always listen to those guys. Or I listen to other people. It's never a problem listening to someone else who has a different vantage point, as long as they're being constructive. And I think you need to know, I think it's important for people who are young, who maybe don't have the experience like a Jim Ross, to listen to someone who's been around a lot longer. If Jim Ross had pulled me aside and said, hey, Jazz, you know, maybe you don't want to, you know, go so long in the promo, or maybe you don't want to go in there with Mike Awesome because he's going to put you to the table and mess you up, I probably wouldn't have. You know what I mean? But
thank you.
I didn't have that.
Yeah.
So, anywho, so how's things out there in Oklahoma right now? You said it's cold there, huh?
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was at a gas station again getting some orange vanilla Coke.
Oh, it's delightful. Orange vanilla Coke, huh? Now, you
yeah.
say orange vanilla Coke, you're actually saying Coca-Cola orange vanilla flavored, or you're saying a soda pop that's orange or orange vanilla flavored? Because I know there's two different things there.
They literally call it orange vanilla. Well, it's orange vanilla flavored Coca-Cola.
Okay, cool. Well, you know what? It's kind of like how, you know, different places, different parts of the country call things various different things. You know what I mean? Like, some places
yeah.
call everything Coke. Some places call, you know, and some people call subs up here, subs here, or hoagies down there and whatnot. I was curious if you were talking
right.
about actual Coke or, you know, soda pop that was flavored that.
yeah, we're talking
cool.
about actual Coke.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know. Coke's been cool
but,
for that. That's good stuff.
Yeah, it is good. So I figured while I'm on the show to – give myself a little extra time so I can go down and get me one on or before I go to my church, which
yeah, yeah.
is literally
stuff.
Right next to my house.
Oh, that's good.
Literally right next to my apartment. But I have to go a little bit further down to get Coke. So like, yeah, I think I'll go.
So let me
ask
you this.
That, but
now, you've lived in the city too, right?
Right, Oklahoma City.
You used to live in the city of, what is it, Ohio, right? Or Cincinnati?
Cincinnati,
yeah.
right.
So let me ask you this. Now, what do you like better, the country living or the city living for yourself?
I'm more partial to the city living.
Yeah. Is that because it's easier to get to places or, you know, out of curiosity?
Yeah, that's pretty
or
much it.
Or you're not, like, feeling isolated? Like, what is exactly?
Well, you just hit it. Was the ability to get places easier.
Mm-hmm. Because I know, like, sometimes some places, I don't know, like, what every state has for, like, public transportation or whatever. I don't even know what Oklahoma has. Do they have public transportation out there?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Our city's transportation system is called Embark. EMBARK.
Mm-hmm.
And they could use some improvement, but we'll get there in time.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, when they think of like a place like Oklahoma, they're thinking like rows of corn and like whatever. Is that pretty much, you know, a hoax or thing, or is that pretty much what it is?
You don't have to go very far at all to find that.
Yeah, I believe it, right? Now, I
mean,
have a question
literally,
for you. You're into the storm chasing stuff, right?
Right.
Because I've never actually talked to someone who's done the storm chasing stuff. So you live in Oklahoma, which is like, you know, Tornado Alley pretty much, correct?
It is. It is indeed Tornado Alley.
Now, how many of those have you actually been in versus how many of you have seen or whatever with your own self? Because I've actually never actually seen a tornado.
I have,
my way, anyway.
I have witnessed 8.
8?
But I've been, wow. Yeah, I've been in the out of circulation of 2 of those.
Mm-hmm. And what is that experience like? I'm just curious. Can you tell people what that's like to be that close to a tornado?
Well, I'm going to say this. You definitely feel small.
Mm-hmm.
You realize how insignificant you are when you're sitting there with a spinning column of air to rip everything apart.
Mm.
And
now
the ones I've been in haven't been large ones. I mean, they were EF0, EF1,
mm-hmm.
low end. But everything considered, I still count them. I mean, they're tornadoes, and I was in them.
Right. Now, when you say a storm chaser, is that pretty much the only thing you want to like chase after, or are you like, I mean, there's various different storms out there, but are there certain storms you're like, I want no part of that storm, that's too much for me, or are you just like tornado guy?
Well,
twisters and tornadoes are pretty
much
the same thing, correct?
My roommate actually chased several of the hurricanes this year,
okay,
down on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, we're used to that. Well, somewhat. I know about the hurricanes.
Unfortunately,
our hurricanes aren't hurricanes compared to like Florida or down south, unfortunately. Or fortunately, depending on how you look at it.
Hey, if the wind speed is above 74 miles an hour, it still counts.
Sure. I know that when we were younger, I remember my mother one time, when I was a little kid, my mother was on the porch for Hurricane Gloria. Remember that one?
Yep.
That's going back some time.
Well,
I might be showing my age. Okay.
That's probably before my time.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, a lot of those hurricanes up my way, up in the Northeast, a lot of the people like my mother and people like that will actually sit on the beach and watch them come in, because up here it's like basically gusts of wind and a little bit of rain. It's like, oh yeah, okay, a hurricane. But like down like then you see like on the news, you see like what it does. The same hurricane will do to like Florida and the South and stuff like that. And weather can be a scary thing. You know what? I got to tell you, you know what one I really never want to be part of? And I'm someone who used to like to surf too. And that is, I think the tidal waves, I think, or the monsoons, those are the things I want no part of for myself.
Well, here's the thing about monsoons, and I think you may be misunderstanding what a monsoon really is.
That's possible.
A monsoon is a seasonal shift in the pattern that produces extremely wet weather in an area that's otherwise pretty dry.
Oh, you're probably correct.
You're
probably confusing that with a tidal wave.
A tidal wave, a tsunami.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thing.
Thinking of. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Tsunami, you only get those with earthquakes.
Right. Right. Now, have you experienced those?
Now,
I've had like two of those.
No. No.
You've never experienced a hurricane?
Inland.
I mean, an earthquake? Oh, yeah.
Well, let me back up. Earthquakes, I never feel them, but we do get them.
Yeah. That's everywhere. Everyone
I've never
gets
felt
them. People.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never felt it, but we've had a couple. We've had a couple in the last couple weeks that have been felt pretty widespread across the Central Plains, but
right.
I never felt it. So doesn't mean it didn't happen. I just didn't feel it.
Now, being someone who's into the storm stuff, is that something you kind of want to be part of, or you're like, I could live without that?
Well,
does the curiosity get to you? Like, I want to know what that's like.
Well, earthquakes, the thing is, you can't predict them.
Right.
You just can't.
Right.
And if you live somewhere that's earthquake prone, kind of have to adapt. You have to learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
But I would want no part of a tsunami, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm someone who I like to surf here and there, but like whenever I think of these tsunamis and I think of what's in the, I've also done the deep sea diving and all that stuff, which is cool because that's what I'm trying to do. But when it comes to like, if I'm sitting on the beach and I see a tsunami starting to form, I'm like, I'm out. Even if you're out, there's no way you're getting away.
Yeah, I'm getting the hell out of there and getting higher ground as soon as I can. In that situation, but
gets to me is because water, and when it comes to the ocean, there's no forgiving that, and there's no way to predict that, and there's nothing you can do. The ocean is a very powerful thing, and you know, it goes down to the respect pattern thing. Like, you got to be able to get it. I mean, it sounds odd to give the beach or the water respect. Same thing goes for all the weather, even though it's, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's just this or that, but you have to give that the same amount of respect you give, like walking down the street, as far as. Expect the unexpected, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, for yourself, you like the tornadoes and stuff, but like, whenever they came, you know that stupid movie they came out with? Oh, I think it's a stupid movie. The Sharknado movie?
Oh, God.
Now,
don't
those are probably the worst movies you could ever think of. They are really bad, but if you want to think of an idea of how terrifying that would really be, I mean, you being from, you know, knowing about tornadoes, could you imagine crossing a tornado with sharks, or a tornado combined with, because it sounds like that would be more like a combination of a tornado and a tsunami put together, which would be a nightmare for anyone. But in general, I would not want any part of that. Now, I've swam with sharks, but you know that was expected too. But again, if you show the respect, you're not going to have to worry about
it. I want no part of sharks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you got to work your way up to that. You know what I mean? Not everyone's going to, you know, go for that. I'm not, you know, saying all there do that either. But, you know, the same thing.
Yeah, but I was just
thinking.
Say,
I'm just thinking, you know, when it comes to tidal waves, all that, or tsunamis, I'm all set, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, but people have no idea how strong waves. Like, I used to surf when I was younger. And unfortunately, Northeast, the only beaches you could really go to up even closer up further north, like Maine or, you know, even higher beaches in New Hampshire. Like, I learned how to surf at Old Orchard Beach up in Maine. But, like, the undertows there is really strong, and a lot of people have no idea what I'm talking about when I'm talking about undertow. But you, who was a wrestling fan, and I think a lot of people unfortunately heard the news last year. It was last year or the year before about the
last
power
year,
of the Chad ocean.
Gaspard.
That's right. I mean, that's some scary stuff. And, you know, and unfortunately, I work with Chad. And I've known Chad and stuff like that, and that was sad. But, you know, hey, at least he saved his kid at least. That's an awesome way to go, man.
The man's a hero.
Yeah, he really is. There's no way getting around that. But as someone who's, you know, surfed and things like that, I know the power of the ocean. You have to be ready for that kind of stuff. And a lot of people who... Yeah, I see a lot of these people, oh, it's a storm, let's go surfing in the hurricane. I'm like, you guys have no idea what that's all about. Because I've seen I've seen the ocean regular surfing destroy people. But no, when you see movies like Sharknado that kind of makes a mockery both out of the ocean and in something serious like a tornado, it's like, yeah, that's fictitious, but I'll tell you right now, I want no part of a tsunami where a, you know, massive wave could in fact bring those kinds of things crashing down upon you. I want no part of that. You know what I mean?
Well, my only problem with Sharknado is that it was so far-fetched that you hear all the time, you know, how in wrestling you should be able to suspend your disbelief. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yep. I'm with you on that 100%. I mean, it doesn't help that it was not the best movie made either. You know, I got to tell you, if you want a tip, though, how to get through it, I think our friends at, Riff Tracks did a great version. That's the only time I'll actually watch it, is if Riff Tracks is doing the watch-along. That's the only way Sharknado is tolerable, is just watching someone rip it apart like I'm going to do in my head anyway. I don't know if you're familiar with Riff Tracks. Have you ever heard of Riff Tracks?
I vaguely know of
Riff Tracks is kind of, you've heard of Mystery Science Theater 3000?
Yep.
I think
it's
you guys might have done it for your show back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, the old Grand Circle Cafe, you know? And and whatnot. But in general, Riff Tracks is basically those guys, just its own thing. But now what they do is they have these screenings, all of these movie theaters, and they watch those kinds of movies, and they rip apart them like the old Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's hysterical. It's the only way that movie or that show is tolerable, because it is really done poorly. And it gets worse, by the way, in case you don't. I think there's like 9 of those now. If it's bad enough with one, you get like 9 versions of the same thing.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean, being someone who's worked in film as well, I just don't know how someone says, okay, I want to make this movie. And then someone said, okay, I'll give you money to make it. I don't know who's to blame on that one. But, hey, Jeremy, I know what you're getting ready to run or whatever. I wanted to say thanks for coming on the show. It was great to have you on.
Yep.
Anything you want to add here at the tail end and before you start getting ready to say your prayers and take your vitamins and stuff?
I can't think of anything, so that's a wrap on me. Have a good one.
All right, Jeremy. Hey, thanks a lot for joining, and keep safe. Watch out for those tornadoes, will you?
Yeah, you got it.
If you see the Wizard of, if you see the Wizard of Oz, let him know I'm looking for him.
Roger that.
All right, brother. May all your dreams come true. Good night.
Night.
So that was fun, huh, people? That was good old Jeremy Moses from our Squared Circle Cafe. That was one of my wife's old co-hosts on her show, and he is nice to have him on here. It's been a little bit since we've seen him and talked to him, and it was great to hear from him. And it's always fun to talk. And I actually never heard anyone talk about the storm chasing thing, even though, you know, when I was a fun fact about me, I used to be huge into science and nature and things like that. You know, of course, I always wanted to be a pro wrestler, but I always had a big feel of the, you know, thing. So I want to thank Jeremy for coming on tonight. And I want to tell you guys are welcome to come on next time. And the number here for the guest line is 516-453-9380. Thank you guys very much for joining me on the F4L headquarters. I am Sean Jazz Stevens, the icon. And feel free to come in on the again with our next exciting extravaganza. Maybe we'll talk more about the Dream Masters thing, and maybe we'll have some more guests next time. And anyway, folks, may all your dreams come true, guys, and live the F4L way with love, care, and compassion, and respect for everyone's individuality. And may all your dreams come true. Good night, everyone. Peace from the F4L headquarters and the icon.